Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. Have you ever been lost in the middle of nowhere, driving on a desolate highway, maybe exploring some woods somewhere? Well, these viewers claim that they have. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, just like these viewers did today, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Stories like yours to help keep this show going. Joining me today is my good friend, the Dark Narrator. He joined me today reading one of these stories, and if you enjoyed his voice, please be sure to subscribe to him. He is a great talent, and I'm sure you'll enjoy the scary stories he reads and produces on his channel. Now, without any further hesitation, sit back, relax, and enjoy these creepy stories from the middle of nowhere. In 1982, I was hired by a large consumer products company that had just opened a production plant in my area. It is still in production and has increased tremendously in size. The company hires several people at once and we all go through the same training and are classed, class 1, 2, 3, etc. I was in class 4, bringing the total people hired to around 200. So, small groups at a time. At that time, we worked 2 shifts 5 days a week and shut down on the weekend. Now, it is a 24/7 work schedule with about 1,200 employees. The building and warehouse was now a new build out in the middle of nowhere and had been farmland for many generations in the same family. In fact, the farmer had an agreement to still use parts of the land for hay production until such time the company needed the land for expansion. The warehouse was huge and tall. It had a rail track in the center to load the train cars in if needed. No racks at the time, just final product wrapped in stretch wrap and stacked on top of each other. The warehouse was marked with lines and numbered for the rows. There was a security guard that made the rounds every few hours, and always had to walk the warehouse. This is a story that was told to several of us by one of the security guards. For several nights, a figure had been seen in the warehouse, but none of the guards could get a good look at the figure, and it would go down one of the rows and get away. This was easy enough to do as the unit loads weren't up against the back wall. One night, one of the guards saw this figure, and it appeared to be dressed in white. The plant has quality labs, and they wear white coats. Thinking it was a lab person, the guard called out to the person to see why he was in the warehouse at 3 a.m. Remember, this place closed at 10:30 p.m. The figure didn't stop. The guard followed him and the figure turned down one of the rows. The guard thought, okay, nowhere for this person to go. And when he got to the row, there was no one there. He turned around and saw the same figure about 200 feet away on the loading dock. Only now he could see the figure appeared to be transparent, and he could just faintly see through the figure. He went back to the guard office. Spooked as hell. He didn't do any more rounds and quit in the morning. In an effort to make it easy to wash hands, automatic faucets were installed in the locker rooms and auto-flush toilets too. People reported that they would find the faucets going and the toilets flushing, and no one would be in the locker rooms or bathrooms. After having them checked out by a number of different plumbers and finding no issues, the phantom flushing continued to happen. The company had to disable the auto feature and go back to the old-fashioned way of washing hands and flushing toilets. I'm going to send you a story that personally happened to me in another email very soon. Thank you for sharing this story. When this unnatural and truly horrific story happened to me, I was just 17 years old and an arrogant male. I am 23 now and have never really told the full story to anyone, but I feel like submitting this will help me get this off my chest. Every summer, I always went to spend around 2 weeks of pure relaxation with my grandparents in East Central Arizona, in the middle of nowhere. Since I was 17, and this would be one of the last times I would venture out to see them for the summer, we decided to make the stay an unforgettable one. And trust me, this one was definitely unforgettable. So the first day, I decided I was finally going to complete a very long trial next to our humble cabin. I had the whole day planned out, with stops for breakfast and lunch, and at the very end, make it back for supper. So I got ready for the hike, getting my knife, food, and other essentials, but the whole time the hair on the back of my neck was standing straight up. I had this feeling of dread for some reason, but I shrugged it off as a horrible sleep schedule. Once my things were packed, I said my goodbyes and left for the hike. As I stepped out of the house, the hot Arizona sun stung my skin, giving me nostalgia of my early years. I made it to the trail that I wanted to trial. Around 5 minutes later, as soon as I had made it to the cool forest, I felt uneasy, like nothing I have ever felt in my life. It was a mix of being watched and a feeling of butterflies in my stomach. This was weird, because I've lived my summer days in the forest and nothing like this has ever happened to me, but after around 45 seconds, it went away. Thoughts rushed through my mind about scary stories for the duration of the first part of the hike, which didn't help at this point, because I was spooked. Around 3 hours later, I found the clearing that I would always stop at, but this time, I would use it as a rest stop to eat. As I found some shade under one of the nearby trees and grabbed my sandwich and crackers, then I heard a twig snap from behind me. At the time, I was a well-built teen and not afraid of too much. But as soon as I called out, it was too late. I saw it. It was tall, skinny, but sort of built. It was freakishly tall, like around 9 or 10 feet tall. But the worst part was, it's dried, pale skin, long claws, and its head was like that of a deer, maybe even an elk. But the eyes... oh God, the eyes. These eyes were blood red and filled with hatred and sorrow. As soon as I spotted this figure, I ran like the wind. But it was no use. It was right behind me. Every step that beast took, it seemed to echo throughout the forest, deafening my ears. As I ran, I was starting to run short of breath, but this thing was not even tired. It didn't even seem to be breaking a sweat. I couldn't hear it panting or anything. But then after around 15 minutes later, I noticed this thing straight from the depths of hell was not chasing me anymore. Thoughts began to rush through my mind. Was that thing real? Am I crazy? Why me? Then I heard my mom's voice. Ben! Ben! Are you there, honey? But it was hollow and off. There was no way it was my mom's voice. Because she lived in Canada, and these were the woods of Arizona. I called back out, but I got no response. Then I called out again, and there was a voice, but one I would never forget. In a raspy, deep and demonic voice, it said, "You better run!" I bolted as fast as I could, my chest still burning from the run before that. I must have run for 45 minutes or more, with this brute right behind me. I was so deep in the forest that it would take at least 50 more minutes to get back to the trail and out of the forest, so I dove for a bush. I could hear the beast, with every step getting closer and closer. I could hear its deep breathing in and out, Then it yelled out, not in pain, but in frustration, as it could not seemingly find me. Then it cried out. It sounded like 1,000 animals dying at once. It sent a shock through my body. Then it ran faster than I have ever seen, back to where this thing started. I really can't remember the rest of it. I remember opening the door and rushing into my room, sobbing. My grandparents got back home from their late lunch and saw me there, and they saw how shaken up I was. They asked what was wrong, and I told them I won't ever be coming back. That night I could hear voices outside of the house. I left to go back to Canada the very next day. I still don't know what that thing was. It looked like a mix of a Wendigo, or maybe even the Rake. I never told my grandparents the full story. All I told them was that I saw something weird in the woods, and I just needed to sleep. If you, or anyone, could tell me what this monster was, please comment down below.
I'm a 17-year-old male growing up in a small city in southwestern Arizona. The city of about 50,000 has little to nothing to do. My childhood was playing outside, my early teens was mostly just staying inside playing games, and now, I smoke weed, drive around the city with friends looking for trouble, but I see it as living my best life in this sorry-ass town. Now that you got some background, here's the story. This event happened a little over 2 months ago, so October. It was me, my girlfriend, and my two best friends, L and J, and their girlfriends T and M. Six people. Remember, that'll be important later on. All six of us decided to go to Ramsey Canyon to smoke, drink, and overall party to celebrate M's birthday. I was excited about the night to come because school was kicking my ass, and to be honest, I needed a break. The night came, and it was time to go have an awesome night. Or so I thought. I went and picked up A first, then L and T in my car, which is a 2006 RWD WRX with the 1JZ engine swap that me and my dad built over the summer. I know most of you listening don't care, but it's important later on. After about a 30-minute drive to Ramsey Canyon, we meet J and M at the parking lot, then we hike about a mile to the spot, and we start to party as the night goes on, and everyone is having a good time. I smoke a blunt, and then I realize I'm getting noticeably high, but my girlfriend, who was doing shots non-stop, also decided to stop, because me and her made the choice to not get fucked up and be somewhat responsible. At this point, it's about 8 p.m, and everyone came to the chill-out point, and we sat around the fire and smoked one blunt after another, hopefully sobering up before we take everyone home. Now at this point, I felt the feeling of being watched. I'm not easily intimidated before I moved out to Arizona. I'm from a bad gang area in Central Texas where I've been robbed at gun and knife point multiple times, so it takes a lot to scare me. But this feeling felt so mean and hateful, like whatever was looking at me wanted to hurt me, and it chilled me to the bone. I tried to shake it off as it was my turn to hit the blunt. About mid-smoke sesh, all the girls decided they had to use the bathroom, which made me feel better because I didn't want anyone going off by themselves. I decided to do a quick head count to make me feel better instead of being paranoid. I counted all the girls, me, and then Jay. I spoke out, "Wait, where's L?" And T said, "He went back to the car because he realized he left his phone and went to go get it about 10 minutes ago. Then all the girls walked off to use the bathroom." I look at Jay and say, hey man, are you getting the feeling of being watched?" And Jay kind of shouted out of excitement, then quieted down, Yeah, I swear, about 10 minutes ago, I heard my name call from over there, and I haven't been able to shake this weird feeling of dread till the girls left. The weird thing is M never left the group, nor our little clearing. She's the birthday girl, and I would have noticed. Then about 10 minutes later, the girls come running back, crying, and T had a cut on her arm. I went from high to sober really quick, and immediately went to T's aid, and asked what had happened. From what I can understand, after they were done using the bathroom, they wanted to wander around for a little before coming back. And when they came upon an observation point of the whole city, M&A wanted a picture, and after about 5 minutes of pictures, M&A's face went cold, and were staring daggers right behind T. T, of course, reacts and turns around to see an 8-foot-tall thing, 2 feet from her. It had deer legs and razor-like 5-inch nails attached to long fingers, and bony hands with the red ooze dripping out of the right hand. T, too terrified to look up, reacts in a way I think and know saved her life. Quickly raised her phone to take a picture, but not to show her friends later on, because the flash was on, and as soon as the flash went off, the creature grunted in anger, and T yelled, "Run!" The girls took off towards the fire, and as T started to sprint, the thing clawed at her trying to grab her, but missed and ended up slicing through her long sleeve and hoodie, like a hot knife through butter. Hearing T's story, I was perplexed. What T just explained, sounded like a Wendigo or a Skinwalker encounter. I'm Hispanic and African American, so I'm no stranger to folklore. After cleaning up and addressing T's cut, I looked over to see M still crying her eyes out in J's arm, and A chain smoking cigarettes by the fire. I went over to her and asked if she was alright, and what she said she saw scared the hell out of me. She said the face was the worst part. It had a deer skull with 10-point antlers, with red eyes. The eyes looked like she was looking straight into hell. The mouth had so many razor-like teeth with meat hanging off the chest and neck. When she looked back at the face, she said it smiled and started talking to her telepathically. It was telling her terrible things, such as no one loves her and that she would kill herself, and she got choked up and then started crying again. It took me an hour to calm her down, and we were all just sitting there in silence when I jumped up and yelled, "Hell! Where's hell?" Me and Jay started yelling El's name at the top of our lungs, and I came up with the best idea I could think of at the time. I told the whole group, "Get your shit together and we're leaving now," and I pointed at Jay that we were going to get the girls in the cars and going to look for El. Got it? He said got it, and we packed all of our stuff and made it to the cars in record time. We made sure the girls were okay in my car, so if they needed, they can get out of there quickly. Me and Jay ran into the forest looking for our dear friend El. Jay had my knife I always carried, and I had my grandfather's M1911 ACP-45 with hollow points, just in case we saw some mountain lions up where we were. I'm no stranger to guns, so I kept it in my waistline and told myself I'll only take it out if I need it. After about 30 minutes of searching, and me and Jay just stopped to take a breather. About a minute in, I hear leaves crunch under a heavy footstep. I reacted quickly, and within a fifth of a second, I draw my weapon and pointed it in the direction of the sound, and pulled the hammer back ready to defend me and Jay. It was El. I lowered my weapon and rushed over to him, hugging him, thanking God he's okay. Then I slapped him and started cursing him out and yelled, "Where the hell have you been?" Jay said, "E, calm down, man. Look at him. He looks like he saw a ghost." I looked at him and yeah, he looks like hell. El said when he was walking back to the car, he got lost and took a second to see if he could hear us and make his way back. As he strained his ears and he heard his name being called in a deep, demonic, raspy voice, he looked over and saw the exact same thing the girls did. He didn't waste any time and took off in a random direction. Now, El is a big guy. He could very well play football as a lineman and get a D1 scholarship without even trying. He said as he was running, the monster was maybe 10 to 20 feet behind him, saying in the same voice, "El, come here. El, come here." Eventually, El came across a cave thing that dipped around into a valley, so El jumped in, praying to God the creature would run by him. The thing stopped right above him, trying to smell for him, he assumed. But luckily, he was near a river, so the sound of the water masked his breathing and the scent. The creature scuffed in anger and ran off, and El said he was going to wait for about 20 minutes to make sure it was really gone, and not waiting him out. He ended up passing out from exhaustion, and the adrenaline started to stop pumping in his blood. He woke up to us breathing heavily near him. He asked where the girls were, and Jay was about to speak, and I shushed them. I signed to them, "Do you hear that?" They both said no, and then they realized what I meant when we got into a defensive position. I don't know a lot about the woods, but I know this. If the animals are quiet around you, that means they're scared of something more dangerous than you. About 10 feet from us to the left, I heard A's voice say, "Baby, I'm scared. I want to go home." I look over fully expecting to see my girlfriend, but my heart jumped straight to my throat, and I got choked up, because now I'm seeing this unholy abomination. L and J took off, and I don't blame them. It took another step, and it spoke to me in that voice that would scare a Navy SEAL, and said,
"You're going to die here."
It took another step and smiled. I straightened up and put on my best face of the, "If you want to kill me, you're going to have a hell of a fight" face, and the smell of the creature got whipped off. I pulled the pistol out and pointed it right at the thing, and I heard a growl come from it. And I started saying a prayer in Latin that I learned from my great-grandfather, if I was ever in danger. Observe, Petrum, Defendit. Amen. Then I fired all 8 rounds into the creature, 3 hits in the head, and then the rest landed center mass. It roared in pain and anger, and I ran, and then I heard the creature following me. I did the 30-minute hike in 10. As soon as I came hauling ass down the trail, El and Jay hopped in Jay's car and floored it down the mountain. I jumped into the car, and as I looked back, I saw the thing running after me. At this point, the girls were crying for me to go, and that's what I did. I started the car and threw it into second gear, and launched the car down after J and L. The speeding limit was 25, and I was doing 50 to 60, drifting corners and not taking any chances slowing down, and as soon as I hit the straightaway, I pulled the pedal to the metal, easily passing J and L, doing 100 miles per hour, not slowing down until I took the SR-92, and then I was doing 5 over the speed limit. I saw McDonald's, so I stopped so I can throw up the evening of junk food. I got back in the car and A asked if I was okay. I just gave her a look, then started the car and drove all of us to my house so we could sleep off the night that just unfolded. J&M slept on the couch, L&T slept in the guest bedroom, and me and A went to my room. I made sure the door was locked 5 times before laying down. She fell asleep crying in my arms. As for me, I didn't sleep. As soon as the sunlight peeked over the mountain, I went outside to see if my car was damaged, to see L and J already out there looking at my car. Nothing was wrong except it was a little dusty. But then I looked at the back windshield, and there was a huge bloody handprint. You can believe this story or not, but if you plan to go to Ramsey Canyon in Sierra Vista, Arizona, bring a firearm at least.
This is a creepy ghost story that happened to me when I was just a young boy. When I was a kid, I used to live at my grandparents' house in Riverside, California. My grandma's house was a big ranch-style home out in the country. My family had always experienced paranormal and sometimes poltergeist activity. It all started when I was 5. I would always wake up in the middle of the night and see this ghost, or maybe a shadow of a little boy. Keep in mind, demons are known to appear as children. I would see this shadow standing at the doorway of my bedroom and sometimes in the living room. I've woken up with 3 scratches on my back multiple times. We would hear voices and footsteps. Fast forward 3 years, my cousin moved in. One night he explained how he awoke with his bed shaking and levitating. He's heard scratches on the door some nights. I think the scariest experience my family had in that house was one summer night in July. My cousin was exiting the restroom when he noticed his sister at the end of the hallway. The strange thing is, his sister was in the other room watching a movie, so what he saw was not his sister. He saw the figure walk off and disappear before his very eyes. The next day, my cousin left to run some errands. I was not aware he had left. I awoke and prepared myself breakfast. I walked over to my cousin's bedroom to ask him if he would like some breakfast. His door was shut. I knocked and asked him if he was, ready for breakfast. There was silence for like 3 seconds or so, when I heard a soft response. "No, thank you." I said okay, and asked if I could come in. I heard a soft, "Yes." I slowly entered, only to see my cousin was not in his room. I freaked out and ran outside. Several nights went by, hearing voices and footsteps and seeing shadows. One stormy night, I awoke at 3 a.m. to hearing what sounded like something really heavy being dragged on the roof, only to find out it was hard scratching at my door. I started to hyperventilate. I was freaked the heck out. The scratching stopped after 2 minutes, and there was nothing but silence that followed it. The house was quiet for the next couple of nights. The last terrifying experience I can remember was on a cold winter night. Me and my cousin and my sister were watching a horror film. About an hour into the movie, I noticed a light through the sliding glass door that leads to the backyard. This orb of light suddenly appeared at the window above the sliding glass door. At the time, we had a dog that started to ferociously bark. He was freaking out and was furious. When all of a sudden, it just disappeared. As soon as it did disappear, we heard a deep, low-pitched snarl. We freaked out and I called my dad. My dad attempted to bless the house, which seemed to have worked for a while. Nothing happened after that night, and my family has never experienced anything like this again. This house is the reason I have a phobia of the darkness. I'm 20 years old now, and live in my own apartment at this point. I do visit that house to see my grandparents sometimes, but when I do, I refuse to sleep alone. I still to this day get bad vibes being in that house. Thanks for sharing this story, and remember, before purchasing a house, it's best to get a priest for a blessing, just in case. I've always lived in a small town, mostly farmlands in Pennsylvania. Being such a small little community, there's not much that goes on without everyone knowing in a few days' time. There isn't much crime, but sadly, more drugs than you could imagine. Which is where my story starts. My husband lived in the middle of our little town growing up with a neighbor whom we would go on fishing trips with. This man's name was Glenn. He lived directly across from them on the borders of the local middle school and elementary. Glenn remained to live in the same house when my husband grew up and moved out of the nest. Over the years, Glenn had a friend named Mike that spent almost every single day with him. They started out as drinking buddies and began experimenting with other drugs together. Now, sadly, when they got on a certain level, they would begin to fight. Mike was white, redneck, and Glenn was an African American. When they got to this level, they would scream racist things at each other. Finally, one night, Glenn had enough and took a big, thick ashtray and smashed Mike over the head. When he hit the floor, Glenn grabbed a sword, yes, of all things, a sword, and stabbed him quite a few times. After a while, he took Mike's body and put it underneath his back porch. First, he made a shallow grave and left him there. After a week's time went by, Glenn started becoming harder and harder into booze and drugs. He claimed to people he was seeing Mike's spirit come to him, which at the time, no one knew that Mike had even died, though maybe he was on a binge of something. Mike was apparently coming to him and telling him to move his body and treating Glenn horribly. This would go on for weeks and weeks, and the people who claimed to have seen Glenn noticed he was going downhill and fast. One afternoon, I was on my way to a store and noticed a ton of cop cars, ambulances, and fire trucks. I became panicked and stopped to check to make sure everybody was okay. I came inside and found my mother-in-law at the window staring out. I asked her what was going on, and she said to me, 2 days ago, there was this horrible smell all around the block and no one could figure out what it was. We looked around for any dead animals and called to complain. Turns out, when the smell started, the cops followed it back to Glenn's porch. Glenn finally did as Mike Spear asked, and he dug up the body and put it deeper in the ground and possibly elsewhere. When the cops came knocking, he confessed right then and there. Maybe it was too much stress for him to carry on, but he went to jail and they took days climbing over the property. My husband was stunned someone he spent so much of his teen years with could do something like that. I believe he got 20 plus years in jail. It should have been more, but you know how the system works. It has to have been one of the most craziest things to happen in our little town as well. It really rocked the core of it for a while. The house has stood empty for years. Everyone that knew would not take that place. Hopefully, Mike's spirit passed on after he got justice. Alright, here's some context. Back in September, I was taking Hunter Ed class with my dad. Basically, you learn parts of a gun, how to handle a gun safely, etc. Since it was in person and not the online classes, the instructors had stories to tell. These were about people not handling guns correctly, drunk shooting, etc. And most of them, they didn't end well. We were shooting a lot those 2 weeks to prepare for the test at the end. One time, we went to an abandoned town that a lot of people shot at. It had been shut down due to high lead levels. I had butterflies the whole ride, but I brushed it off as just nerves. Mistake number one. That evening, we were the only ones there. We thought it would be pretty nice, since there'd be more spots open. Keyword, thought. We settled on a spot behind a hill and shot at another hill nearby. My dad was sighting the .22 gun we had just brought, and I was sitting behind him. My earplugs were in, so it was hard to hear things, especially far away. All of a sudden, there was a very loud shot. It had to have been my dad, since I was close to him. Initially, I was scared, as the aforementioned stories that were told of shots being accidentally fired didn't end well. In a concerned voice, I asked my dad if he had just shot. When he said no, my fear became much greater. Another shot was fired, and our only thought was, what the heck? We quickly tried to become seen. We quickly unloaded the gun so it was safe and ran up the hill. Mistake number two. My mom was wearing bright yellow, and we were all jumping up and down, waving our arms. There was no way we couldn't be seen. After two or three more shots, we ran to the edge. It was like a valley or a dried-out lake or something. The edges were very high. We were at the bottom, and the shooter was at the top. The next part confirmed our belief that he had seen us, and still continued to shoot. My dad called the police to report what was happening. He walked further out to see details like the color of the truck, how many people, etc. Just a bit after my dad got on the phone, the guy left, probably assuming the cops or other authorities were called. We wish we had brought the gun, because we were convinced he was shooting at us. We stayed there for what seemed like forever. We had to wait for the police, and a group of maybe four high schoolers came. My dad went and warned them about the previous events, and we decided after 15 minutes of waiting and no police arriving that we wanted to get out of there. We went and gathered our stuff, and I looked at where the shots had come from and where they had went. The shots were no more than 25 meters away from where we had been. If he had bumped these guns just a bit, we would have been dead or in the hospital. Driving away, the police finally came. They asked us some questions, and we were finally able to get the crap out of there. He was unfortunately never caught, and we fortunately never went back there. We don't know if he was trying to mess with us, kill us, shoot us, or was just drunk, but we were terrified. Thanks for listening to these creepy and downright scary middle-of-nowhere stories. If you enjoyed these stories, please hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're new to the swamp, why not join us and subscribe? Turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you would like to share, just like the viewers in this video, be sure to submit your story at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this show going. If you enjoy my friend, the dark narrator's voice, please be sure to subscribe to his channel. You can find the link to do so in the top of the description. I'm sure you'll enjoy his content. He uploads great scary stories all the time. If you're not aware, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and just about everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp the way you do. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.